So Texas has Kansas in its way of a Big 12 championship rematch between either West Virginia or Oklahoma. But we hope that you pretend we're football for the next hour. I am your host, Will Baser. I'm joined alongside by Johnny Brashear and Tim Preston, as always. You guys are listening to the Hornscast channel. Today we're going to be talking about Texas facing Citadel and what impressed us and what disappointed us. Then the next game on Turkey Day, Texas plays UNC, the biggest game of the year so far. We'll talk about what to expect out of that game and what to expect out of the rest of the tournament as Texas plays in the Las Vegas Invitational. But before we get into all that, Johnny, how was your cruise? How was it?
It was good. I enjoyed myself. I did my best to remember as little as possible while I was on board. I think it's fair to say that I am single-handedly responsible for about a 1% rise in Tito's valuation if they ever IPO, because I knocked out a lot of it. It's about the only way I can ingest more is if I was financially induced to do so. Yeah, it was good. Went and hiked up a Honduran hill, and so they could show us where the boat was. Kind of felt anticlimactic, if I'm honest.
And then they shuffled y'all into their personal bars and stores, right?
No, well, they did send us to a small beach, and at that point, it's like, fine, whatever. I'm just gonna stare at the ocean and eat some terrible nachos because it's what was there. That was good. Went there, went to Belize, saw about 1% of a manatee. They say, yeah, go on this cruise, you'll see manatees. Well, it's in a river that's not very clear. So really what it is they have to turn off the engine and float on the river and point out that half second when the manatee comes up to breathe. So you see like the nose and you're like, oh, that was a manatee nose. Oh, there was I think that was a manatee nose. Might have been a log. Probably a nose.
Probably a log.
Yeah, yeah. Then went to Cozumel and
there was just Jeff Haley. Just like, where's Johnny at?
Pretty much. Yeah. Yeah. Which, by the way, I enjoyed Jeff. He was good. Thank you to Jeff for coming in. In fact, I thought I might just bring him in on the call and drop off and just listen to the next show when you guys post it later in the week. It's a pretty great way. Yeah. I don't even have to talk. I just listen to other people say nerdy things about basketball. It's pretty effective use of my time.
Yeah. Jeff could definitely take my spot.
Yeah, he could take all three of our spots, let's be honest.
Nope. Only I bring what I bring.
That's true. Unless Jeff love knows me some how meat. play a guitar and like sort of hope to live inside a cover band. Like that then you're out. But right. Otherwise, yes.
He can't do it.
But y'all, let's go ahead and get into pretend you're getting to know us before we get too far off track here. Let's get even farther off track and talk about this question in memory of Stan Lee. We waited for you, Johnny, to do this one. What would be your Marvel Cinematic Universe cameo? If you were to have one, just an open-ended question here, what would it be? Who would you be? What movie? Where would you be?
Okay, so I was thinking about this, and what came to mind is that I would like to do something sort of like Stan Lee, where I show up in every single movie, but I don't even want it to be a part with words. I just want to be like a running gag. I would love to be the guy in every single movie who like gets a door slammed in his face or something. Like it's just, you see Gamora walks through a bar, opens the door, slams it into my face, and then I'm, you know, in Iron Man, and I'm in front of the Stark building, and Tony Stark walks out and just slams it in my face. Just every single Marvel movie, I'm somewhere in there just getting the hell beat out of me by a door.
I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, because then I personally, if I knew there was a guy out there that was his role, like there was the guy in a couple different movies, like what was it, The Hangover and like Wedding Crashers or something, where all he was the overeager cover band singer at the receptions. Like that was his thing. Mm-hmm. And you instantly recognized him when he showed up and you knew what he was going to do. And it was great. And I loved that guy. And I would love to just be like this one tiny little piece of the universe that all they ever see is me just getting smacked in the face with a door repeatedly.
And it's something I could totally see Marvel doing, too. Like, yeah. That is something that I could see. It also reminds me of, I'm sure y'all have no idea what about this, but The Last Airbender. The cabbages sure. guy? My cabbages!
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The one, he always finds the airbender because he's always had the cabbages that get destroyed by Aang, the Avatar. Just, he's always, that's you, except yeah. it's instead of cabbages, it's your face that's getting destroyed.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, quick sidebar. Are you aware that Netflix is doing that show? Like, they've already signed on to do a live-action version of that show.
Avatar?
Yeah.
If it's anything like the movie, it's going to be a disaster.
It's the exact same showrunners as the first, as like the Nickelodeon show.
Okay, then it should be good.
Yeah, I'm super pumped. Yeah, the movie was trash, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God, that show is wonderful.
So, what about you, Tim?
Mine's nowhere near as good. Nowhere near as good. That's weird, because usually mine's way better than Johnny's. But
I had this... 2 weeks to think about it. It'll be back to normal next week.
So I kind of figured probably one of two things. Early on in every Avengers movie, they have some success, and then like they kind of get together and have a party, like after the first win or whatever, and then they're feeling good about themselves, and then like and then the new antagonist comes in. But at that party, they're having fun, everyone enjoys. But I'm probably like the guy who like walks in, thinks he's king shit, and then Thor walks by, and every girl in the room like turns around and follows him or whatever. And I'm like, what? Or if not that. I'm thinking that, like, somehow the Hulk or whatever, like, there's some kind of huge battle scene, and they are going crazy, and it's, like, Hulk versus whoever, and, like, shit's just falling all over the place. And like, as he jumps to the top of this building, and he's trying to save, like, somebody, like, Black Widow, or I suppose, probably, or whatever, and she's falling, and he jumps and saves her, and it's really climactic, and all of a sudden, like, he takes this, like, terrible shell or whatever, and then, like, a piece of the building falls down and like crushes my body, and as I'm laying there in agony, I look up and I say, that's frustrating.
That works. There we go.
I love it. I love that. That's great. I don't know if mine's as good as y'all's, but mine would
spoiler
be
spoiler alert, it won't be.
it probably won't be. But I was thinking, so here's the thing about Deadpool, right? Deadpool has always been my favorite Marvel quote-unquote superhero. I don't think he's a superhero, but it's because...
Four or five moments, Will. All what? It takes. 4 or 5 moments. That's
four or
all
five
it
moments.
Takes.
4 or 5
Wake
moments.
Up, eat breakfast, be hero.
But, I mean, I started reading his comics back when I, like, in 2008, and then it got really big, and when I was in college, I was super, super excited for the movie, and it didn't disappoint. But, the second one kind of did. The beginning of it did, at least. I really wish he would have been in love with Death instead of his actual lover. But the one thing about Deadpool is everybody thinks he's crazy because he's the only actually aware, self-aware superhero where he realizes he's in a comic and not like in real life. And so you can't decide if, okay, is he crazy in-universe or is he the only sane one because he knows what he is? So during the movie, I would play Stan Lee, and Deadpool would be the only one to realize that I'm not Stan Lee, and everybody else is treating me like Stan Lee, and he's like, Stan Lee's dead. Who the hell are you? I'm Stan Lee. So,
Excelsior.
So that would be my cameo, is Deadpool realizing, being the only like superhero to realize that I'm not Stan Lee.
I was thinking you would be like his therapist or something, since he's the only self-aware one. He's got to get it out somewhere.
No, he does it in fourth wall breaks. That's how
okay.
he does it.
Fair enough.
Well, and with that Hindi cab driver.
Yeah, that too.
True.
That too.
True.
True.
He seems nice.
Let's go ahead and talk about basketball, though. Let's get into the Citadel. Texas just scored almost 100 points. Jeff was pretty spot on. He said Texas could play terrible offense and still score 100 points. Well, almost spot on, because they didn't quite score 100 points, but they did play some phenomenal defense on Citadel, better than what Clemson did earlier on in the season. So let's go ahead and talk about Citadel. What impressed you versus Citadel when you were watching that game? I know there isn't much you can take from it, but what impressed you?
So when you're taking a look at that game, for me, there's two big takeaways. The defense was really good, which we assumed. So offensively, obviously the first half was really bad. So we'll touch on that in a little bit. But as far as some of the positives to take away, there was a validation that I saw, and then there was kind of like a, oh, all right, this is kind of nice, like an aha moment. To me, the validation was, we know that Texas, when they're at their best, is finding lane touches with dribble penetration, whether it's early in the shot clock or in transition or, you know, off of ball screens or whatever it might be. We are getting into the lane. We are saying with either Coleman, Ramey, Roach, or Mitru Long, all right, defender, it's a foot race to this spot, and because we know where this spot is and you don't, we're going to beat you there. And when we've been able to do that, we have found, in a lot of circumstances, some good offense, particularly going into the rim or on slip screens, or, you know, again, in transition or whatever it might be. And they've looked pretty good with that. So that's more validation of that. Because in the second half, when Texas really kind of poured it on, we were still seeing a lot of lane touches. What was kind of an aha, and for me a very very good thing, particularly in direct contrast to the first half, is this was the very first time that Texas has really built and sustained a lead that was dominated by three-point shooting. So as awful as Texas' three-point shooting was in the first half, they were 10 of 21 in the second half, and that just hasn't happened yet, right? So whenever they've looked really good on offense, it's almost been in spite of the three-point shooting. They maybe one or two shots, but for the most part, it's almost all at the rim. And to see them funnel a lot of their open shots to probably the two best three-point shooters on the team right now, which is Feberson and Ramey, was really good. To see them stay consistent with that, with their ball action and, you know, and lane touches and then find some three-point shooting outside of lane touches. That was really good. So it can only be a helpful thing for them emotionally to say, hey, we have the ability level to shoot well from three and build and sustain a lead in that kind of way, as well as knowing, hey, we can always attack the rim as well from dribble penetration. So it was that was good.
If we could find a way to transplant Snoop Roach's confidence in his shot into Jace Fevers' body, he would hit so many threes. Because Roach is not afraid to shoot that shot at any point. And Fevers
37% on the season.
Yeah, overall. And if Fevers is like, he's getting better about it, and he, you know, in the second half he really started to show it. Here, he started to feel it, which is good, and he needs to have that confidence because it's the primary reason he is out there. You know, what frustrates me about this team offensively is that their execution on offense is not poor. It's not that they are waiting until the last 5 seconds to throw up some off-balance, crappy shot. It's you know, we can talk about sort of the pros and cons of their offensive game plan, but, you know, the vast majority of the threes that they took in the first half were open or barely contested. Like, they weren't shooting a lot with hands right in their face. And if they can hit those, you know, like that's what we saw in the second half. In that first 8 minutes, you saw the sort of monster that this team could be if those shots that are open fall.
Yeah, and you need to be like 40% on those shots, but
sure,
they were 28.
And that's fair. And You know, you could make the argument that if they're not going to make more than 28%, they should take less of those. And that's also fair.
Well, they were under 10% in the first half.
They were. Right. Yeah. They ended at 10%. So, which is less than 33 last time I checked. So, when I watch them, what bothers me more than anything is that I can see that the execution of the plays, especially this last game, because they were much less robotic. There was much less of this automatically pass here regardless of what's going on kind of situation at hand. So they're doing almost everything right in terms of executing the actions and the plays. They just don't finish it with a made basket. So it feels, you know, it's basketball blue balls, I guess. Like it's you're like almost, you know, like almost there, didn't quite happen. But again, this is sort of like that's when you look at the first eight or 10 minutes of the second half, that is what it looks like when the shots go in, because the shots they were hitting weren't that much more open than they were in the first half. They were going in, and that makes such a massive difference in the effectiveness of the offense.
But there was a difference, and I'm sure, you know, as we're watching it, people see it. So a couple of things offensively that we have seen a lot of in the first half was absolutely chock full of, and I'm sure we're going to see more of this. So Citadel, maybe more so than other teams that we played, every single ball screen, every single one against the Citadel, they went under. There were zero times where the on-ball defender went above the screen to kind of chase. And so Citadel was saying, all right, we know that we can't stay in front of them if they take that screen and look for penetration. So we're going to have to go under to give ourselves a better chance. So they went under. And so Texas has obviously been kind of trained or drilled into them. If they go under, we're looking for a hard bounce. You know, like one of your options is a hard bounce three. And so over and fucking over in the first half, we saw hard bounce three, hard bounce three, like dribble into three-point shot. There is the only guy right now who has shown he can hit that with any kind of level of success is Ramey. And Roach can. We just haven't seen a whole lot of it yet this year. He showed it some at the end of last year. But right now, Ramey's the only guy who's probably even close to 40% on that shot. So whereas in the second half, I thought the three-point shots that we were getting looks at were, you know, Febres took some shots where he, you know, got some pass and rotation balls around, you know, where he was at the low baseline on the perimeter. But everyone else, like almost every single other shot, came off of dribble penetration. And so their body was already flat to the rim. And so I would say it's going to be interesting for me to see, you know, how does Texas... How does Shaka, this guy who really wants his players to trust in their abilities and to have confidence and to say, yes, we can step into these shots and do good things, and yet also know, like, well, we just really don't want Eli taking hard bounce threes. We probably don't want Matt taking hard bounce. Be confident, guys. Be confident. Be confident.
Yeah.
but maybe don't take that shot, you know? Yeah. So, look, if there are coaches that play us that are not teaching their defenders to go under ball screens, and they're stupid. That's just dumb. Because they have to take something away. If you're going to take something away, take away the triple penetration, make us shoot threes.
And that's fair. I think it's fair to point out that dribble penetration was largely better in the second half. And there were some better skip passes in the second half than there were in the first half. One of them in particular I recall was somebody, I forget what the guard, who the guard was, that passed it to Dylan.
Osakowski.
To Osakowski, and he immediately passed it to Hepa, who was open in the corner. The shot didn't go, but it was a good ball movement. It was good execution. It was a good shot. Like, everything about that was good. It just didn't result in points. And since I mentioned Osakowski, I am glad to see him using the pump fake three to get into the lane more often. They must have been hammering him on it in the past few days, because he did it so much more this game than he had in any of the previous games. He still needs to finish better in the paint. It felt like once he got close to the paint, he got a little indecisive. But I would rather him be indecisive in the paint than beyond the arc. like there are things that I saw that I liked. And like Tim mentioned, the defense was phenomenal. They had some busted assignments in the first half, which was sort of it's not something I'm too worried about, because when you've got a team that plays five out basketball, and you get beat on a screen, there's going to be an open lane. But you're not going to have a lot of these situations where there's not a guy near the paint as a help defender, in conference play or, you know, most of these games. So, yeah, I mean, on the defensive side, other than a couple of those busted assignments early on, very pleased. You know, when you can hold a team like Citadel to basically half their scoring output, you did something right.
So, real fast, I want a solid, they did well here on offense point. Like, I want some optimism here from you, Johnny. What is it going forward from this game where it's like, wow, the offense really killed it here?
Well, I mean, aside from that, you know, sort of 8-10 minute stretch I mentioned earlier, as much as I don't want him shooting as much as he is, it is legitimately fun to watch Eli Long play basketball, because he has a flair that reminds me a little bit of Jacoven Brown. He does not have his shooting ability, obviously, but he has this sort of ability to improvise within a structured environment that I enjoy. You know, not many guys have the balls to try and pull off a behind the back dribble in the paint going full speed to traffic, but he did, and it worked amazingly enough, probably because nobody expected it to happen. Yeah, you know, I like watching him play. I like his active defense. I mean, a guy who I know they say he's 6'1". I don't think he's 6'1".
He's 5'10".
He's not long, you know. I mean, other than his name, he is not long. But he still gets steals. You know, he still forces turnovers. You know, he's very intelligent about how he plays. He's very active on both ends of the floor. So, you know, I don't think he's going to be going. He's not going to be starting anytime soon. But I just kind of keep watching him because he's just sort of fun to see.
And he plays really hard. Yeah, that dude plays really hard.
Yeah.
So Tim, on the other side of this, because you're the optimist of the show, tell me something that was very troubling about the defense. Anything?
About our defense?
Or about the offense?
Yeah, I don't know that I'd find a lot. Well, okay, I guess so. One thing I have found interesting on the defensive end that I think we'll see how the next couple of weeks unfolds. Pay attention to Jackson and Jericho when they are at the high post defensively. It's been interesting to see how quickly they rotate to the rim. So we've got some terrific perimeter defenders in Roach and Ramey and Coleman. And so we have seen it's been Jackson and Jericho are playing pretty late. Now, both of them have the explosiveness and the length to go ahead, and when they do rotate down to be help, that they have a lot of that athleticism to really kind of catch up and get themselves in that position. But I'll be interested to see if they can play with that same type of patience, maybe, or vision as they go through, because a team like North Carolina, if you don't rotate early, it's done. And I know that you can take away some options for other teams if you stay home from that spot and allow Kerwin to get there with his length and speed and recover. But we will see. I think there's going to be a chance that we could really get into some foul trouble in our big man here once the competition level raises. And I don't know if that, like, you saw Mo last year, and obviously they're not the help defenders that Mo was. He was always there early. Like, if you got past Texas's perimeter defenders, he was, like, you were going to get into him. And maybe you'd kind of find an outlet to whatever guy that Mo had left, and then Mo felt like, oh, okay, I'm big enough or tall enough that I can contest and we'll be okay. Obviously, as good as Jackson and Jericho are, and as much length and athleticism as they have, they're not Mo. So I will be interested to see how they truly protect the rim when that gets better.
Speaking of which, I really hope Jericho figures his shit out, because while he hasn't been terrible, he has not been great. And one thing that is pretty abundantly clear at this point is that Jackson Hayes is going to pick up fouls at a pretty rapid pace against better big man, because he, like you said, he's late, but he also reaches, because he's long and he wants to get the ball and he does freshman
fouls
things.
That are like, you're like, why do that?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's the learning curve of being a freshman, but if Jericho gets into foul trouble, there's a good chance Jackson is going to...
Sims is going to get into foul trouble.
Well, I mean, you know, last year he played some games where he did a good job limiting foul trouble, where he played some pretty significant minutes and didn't get a ton of fouls. So he has that capability to not get in a lot of fouls. But Jackson will definitely get a lot of fouls. So I'm hoping Jericho plays well enough that we don't have to wonder how quickly Jackson will get his fourth foul.
Oh, yeah. Right. Well, yeah. Jericho's got 14 fouls in 90 minutes.
Right.
So it's going
to
happen.
The obvious issues with this team through these first four games have to be shooting and big man play down below. Those are the questions. Those are some of the questions heading into the season. They're still pretty big questions after four what were supposed to be cupcake games.
Yeah. Now the big guy thing is actually. It's more of a question than I thought it was initially. So, I'm with you.
Yeah, so now they're heading into UNC in Las Vegas, the Las Vegas Invitational. This is going to be an interesting game because I personally don't think Texas is ready for North Carolina, not at this point. But let me get y'all's guys' ideas on what to expect out of UNC. Because I don't know about other Longhorn fans, but I haven't been watching UNC. I've been watching Duke and Zion Williams destroy people. What exactly is UNC doing? Who are their players and what is their system?
Well, this is a UNC kind of through and through under Roy Williams kind of team. The things that they're good at under him, they're good at again this year. They play pretty fast. They're a tremendous, tremendous secondary break team. Fantastic. They're getting good shooting from their perimeter players, and so you know they're comfortable in the half court too. So this is a team that I think comparable to there a couple years ago when they won the title. They've got plenty of guys that all have stuck around for a while. They understand the system, tremendous athletes, but there's not really that guy that's going to stand out and say like, okay, like the Zion Williamson where he's going to score 25 points a game. But they're going to get good contributions from everybody, and they play Williams' system very well. They'll be tough on the glass. They will create some turnovers, but you know, any time that they can get on the move, they will. They're better defensively than they've been the last couple of years, or at least better than they were last year. So, I mean, they're very solid everywhere. Roy recruits extremely well. So they'll play fast. They'll defend a little bit. They'll rebound well. If we can't get their shooters struggling a little bit, that'll be a tough game to win. I mean, Texas certainly athletically can hang with them, but it will be interesting to see how well we stop their break, or at least how often we can keep them from getting out in that break as much as possible.
You know, it's going to be interesting to see, because I think that both teams like to run. Or their intent is to run. They want to run. They both want to be out in transition. But both teams are very good at stopping their opponent from getting out in transition and getting transition buckets. So North Carolina's defense is surprisingly stout this year. I mean, not that they're ever terrible, but they're extremely effective this year. They do shoot threes well, but they really don't shoot that many of them. They really get in the paint. They get twos a lot. I think what is it like? They out of the. You know, their point distribution, they're one of the bottom 50 in the country in terms of the percentage of three-pointers they attempt or make versus twos and free throws. So they don't really shoot a lot of threes, but they can make them when they shoot them. Nasir Little will be I'm going to be interested to watch him play because, you know, in a world without this Duke team, a lot of people would be talking about him because he was basically the best non-Duke recruit in the last cycle. Luke May is back there, and while he is struggling some from three, he is still doing basically everything else well. Cameron Johnson is there. They're good to great in every single offensive metric. So it will be a big test for Texas defensively to see if they can slow them down. What's interesting to me is that they're similar to Texas. They're not quite as good in this disparity as Texas, where they don't turn the ball over a ton. They force some turnovers, but the disparity between the two is not as much as it is with Texas. Like, Texas turns the ball over very few times, and they force a lot of turnovers. This year is thus far their best year in that respect. Like, they're 32nd in the nation in turnover percentage.
Having two
offensively.
Point guards helps in that regard as well.
Or four.
Basically, three, four. Yeah, they're turning it over about at the rate Isaiah Taylor did his junior year, which is really good. But they're forcing a lot more turnovers, which is part of why they're still able to be an effective team even with piss poor 3-point shooting. So it will be interesting to see if they can recreate that same sort of thing. Like Tim said, athletically they can hang with North Carolina, but North Carolina is the clear favorite here for me, but I don't think it's not an impossible task to see Texas win this game.
So then tell me, how does Texas go about winning this game? What does Texas need to do here to stop UNC? How does Texas start their offense against UNC? How do they attack them?
So I think it's, how do they do it? Basically, if they can force North Carolina to, if they can keep North Carolina out of the paint and keep them out of transition, then they'll get North Carolina out of what they want to do, and that's their opening. Forcing turnovers will be good because I really think the only way Texas wins this is if they have significantly more possessions than North Carolina does, by forcing turnovers, by not turning the ball over themselves, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's the way it works. If this turns into a track meet, it favors North Carolina because, like I said, they do shoot the three well. And if they get into those secondary break situations, or if they have a trailing guy like Luke May who can hit a lot of threes, then it's going to be tough for Texas. But I think if they're able to limit those opportunities, they'll have a shot.
We have to shoot well.
Yeah.
if you added, what, 5 or 6 percentage points to Texas's 3-point shooting over the course of the season so far, you could make a case that we have the athletes and the playmakers to hang with anybody in any game. We haven't made those shots. We don't look wonderful on that side of the ball. If we have a game where we do, if the second half versus the Citadel, is what we get from a shooting standpoint or something close to that, then this is a winnable game. I mean, there's no one we can't beat. We, as Johnny said, we are phenomenal at taking care of the ball. We're a tremendous defensive team. We're rebounding better than I thought we would, particularly because we're getting some good contributions there from our guards. We just simply have to shoot better. And in particular, Roach and Coleman have to shoot better. If everyone else shoots the exact same and Matt and Roach kick it up a little bit, this is a winnable game for us. We could go out of Las Vegas undefeated. If they don't get their shit together from the perimeter, 0-2 is just as reasonable. So we need to shoot well, and we need our best players to come ready to play with that, because stylistically, systematically, this offense looks pretty good. We're getting a lot of clean looks. Ball movement is very good. I think we're utilizing our strengths consistently. And again, defensively, we're going to be in every single game. I just don't see teams blowing us out because of how well we compete on the defensive end. So if we can keep things close as early as possible, not allow UNC to kind of get a, you know, an 8 or 12 point lead or whatever, that will help us.
Yeah, Matt Coleman, Tim's adopted son, needs to have an A-plus game for Texas to win. Because if he puts in another C-minus, D-plus performance, it's a wrap. We can't have him. And, you know, he's doing a lot of things well, but if he continues to shoot as poorly as he has, not just from distance but at the rim, it's just going to be rough. It's going to be a big request for this team to win if Matt is not playing at or near his peak.
Basically, this team needs to get really hyped up about this game. They need to get into sort of like what Texas football was during Iowa State, where they are just in it. They are feeding off of energy that they are creating themselves, that, you know, the non-existent crowd there is going to be creating. They need to feed off some sort of energy, whether that's Shaka Smart, that's their own players on the bench, it's themselves, it's the band that might make it out there. I don't care. They need to feed off of some energy against UNC to get themselves into another level, because that is the only way I see this team really turning up the notch on shooting the ball. Because I don't exactly see Texas just coming out of nowhere shooting lights out when they can't even do that against Citadel, who's giving them those shots. You're not doing that against UNC. Something has to happen.
Yeah, you're right, but we don't need to be lights out. We need to be at 35%. If we can be okay, yeah. Which we haven't been, if we can be okay, we defend and rebound well enough that we're going to be good and we take care of the basketball.
And that's what I'm saying. I'm saying to get that next step up, they need something to happen. They
sure.
need, whether it's feeding off their own energy, they make a few shots and they're like, yeah, we're feeling ourselves here.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
That's what I'm expecting. That's how I think Texas wins this game. Is obviously, you know, y'all are talking about Texas' defense is going to kick butt, but it's the offense. And how do you get the offense going? If it's not coaching, they have to do it themselves.
Yeah, I would say, so I don't think people, maybe some people do, but I don't think enough people appreciate the fact that even with this terrible shooting from three, this is still a top 50 national offense. Like, in adjusted offensive efficiency, they're like 47 out of 353. And that's because they don't turn the ball over well. They shoot well from two. They're rebounding better than you would expect. They don't, you know, they don't end possessions and steals basically ever. They do a lot of things well. It's just we all focus, and, you know, I'm as guilty as this as everyone else, of focusing on the bricked threes, because Lord knows we've seen it for years now. Like, there's just been a lot of them, and so we're sort of conditioned to go, well, fuck it, it's happening again. When they go, they miss their first two, we're like, well, we're in for it again tonight. And so, like, it really is. It stands out because it's the only thing that they are not doing well. Like, the free throw shooting is, again, not great, but that's partly a function of having Sims and Hayes shooting as many of the free throws as they are. That's it. Like, if they make, like Tim said, they make 35% of their threes, they're in this game. And they might have the lead here and there. Because it's not, you know, the difference between 28% and 35% is what, you know, two, three made threes in a game. That's six to 9 points difference in the final score. And that's a huge amount when you have a team that is as defensively sound as this one is.
If Coleman goes 2 for 6 from three in the last game, and Ramey goes 2 for 5, and Roach goes, whatever, 4 for 11 instead of 3 for 11, like, just one three that doesn't get them close to 50%, but one three for each of those guys, all of a sudden the last game looks very different from a percentage standpoint. Now, the other thing I would say real quickly here is, if there's one blue blood team in the country that Texas generally plays well against that I would like for us to play, it's got to be UNC.
Yeah.
If you go back, I mean, whether even, like, I want to say, what, 1996, when Dante Calabria was on the North Carolina team, and Brandy Perriman, and anyways, we beat them, and over the years we've showed out pretty well against North Carolina, and we've taken our L's too against them, but that's a matchup that we have generally played pretty well in. So I'm, that standpoint, whatever traditional piece of that you know, does or doesn't bring, that brings me a little bit of hope as well.
Okay, so to end off this part, this segment, tell me, why is Texas going to win and why is Texas going to lose?
Shooting. It's a three-point shooting. I mean, honestly, like everything else is I'm not going to call it a known quantity, but, you know, it's a fairly reliable band of output in most every other offensive and defensive metric. They've been really solid in just about every other one, but the three-point shooting is the one with the widest variance. So for me, I'm going to go back to what Tim said. If they shoot 25% from three, they lose. If they shoot 35% or better, they might win. But, you know, it'll be at least a lot closer, if not a win.
So what are we talking about if they win, and what are we talking about if they lose, Tim?
For me, if they win, it's going to be because Kerwin and Matt played good games. We're going to come away saying, hey, they came to play today. If they lose, you know, well, and let's just say Matt and Kerwin could play a good game and we could still lose. UNC is better. So I don't think that that's really all that much of a stretch to say, hey, they're better. So if we win, it's going to be because Matt and Kerwin played well, or at least I'd be shocked if Matt and Kerwin play poorly and we win. But I think a win would be because Matt and Kerwin play well. We'd lose because they're better. Like, they're better, out execute us and shoot better and whatever it might be. So kind of up and down the lineup, they're just a stronger team.
Okay. Yeah, Pomeroy has them as Texas as a 28% chance to win, and that feels about right. You know, 28-35, somewhere in there. Like, solid underdog.
And because we have a little time left in this segment, my brother has one question for us. Is Luke May the next great big white man at UNC?
Well, he's a senior, I think.
Yeah, he's a senior, so he already is, I guess.
Has he done that, is what I'm trying to say?
I mean, his story is enough. You know, his sort of rise from, was he a walk-on? I think he was a walk-on, right?
That sounds right. I'm trying to remember back to the tournament his freshman year when he kind of busted onto the scene.
I think he was a walk-on that just sort of earned his way on. So, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's sort of a, he's the Baker Mayfield of North Carolina. no, it's
way more likable.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, he seems like less of a douche. So, I mean, I don't think we're going to think about him in the same breath we think about Hansborough or something like that, but I don't know, maybe North Carolina fans do.
Psycho T.
They seem to, you know, they seem to really dig the guy, and they were very happy he came back, so maybe they do think about him the same way as, you know, bloody forehead Hansborough or whatever he's got going on. Yeah, right. So maybe.
All right.
When he gets on, he can shoot. I mean, that guy's fun to watch play. I love those stretch fours. To me, that's one of my favorite things about the college game, is just seeing those guys who are pretty diverse in their skill sets, and maybe are not the best athletes, but they, you know, they catch the ball clean. They're, you know, they're a great release valve for their point guards. That's fun when you see point guards like North Carolina's going to get that can have guys that can kind of bail them out with that, and tough to defend against.
He's definitely played the most for the Tar Heels this year with 106 minutes over four games. So the next game Texas will be playing is against another blue blood basketball team, either Michigan State or UCLA. We're expecting UCLA. We're not expecting to beat UNC here. I think that would be pretty optimistic, very optimistic to expect Texas to beat UNC here. So let's talk about UCLA. We'll start off with them. What do you expect out of UCLA? Who are their players? What is the system they run? And how does Texas match up? We'll start with you, Johnny. What do you think?
Yeah, so really, they sort of like North Carolina. They don't shoot a lot of threes. They play a pretty fast tempo. They block shots well, but it's basically one dude, sort of like Texas last year. They've got this guy, Moses Brown, who he's swatting a lot of things. And he's going to be an interesting matchup for Jericho and Jackson because he's a 7'1 freshman, but he's also like 245 or something. So it'll be interesting to see sort of that those guys play against each other. I think UCLA, if they were at full strength, would be a much more dangerous squad. But they lost two of their five-star freshman recruits to injuries, and a third guy who was going to be a pretty significant rotation player. So they're not as good as people might have thought they were going to be this year. They're not bad, but they're not who Las Vegas thought they were getting when they booked this a year ago.
So, Texas should be the favorite if they play UCLA. If we were ranking, most to least likely wins out of the three possible opponents for me, it would go UCLA, UNC, Michigan State in that order. And there would be a reasonable gap between UCLA and UNC. I think it's one. They're sort of like North Carolina in there. There's what they're attempting to do. They just don't have the horses North Carolina does. So they're more vulnerable to a defense like Texas has to getting moved out of what they want to do. So I'm more optimistic about a matchup against UCLA than I am against the other two.
I'd agree with that. I think they're a bit of an anomaly under Alford there for what his time has looked like, where in previous iterations of their teams, they've been pretty reliant on the three-point shot, and they played pretty fast, and they do again this year. But this year, they're pretty methodical when they get into the half-court sets. Again, they attack the glass well. They get into the lane quite a bit. But I don't think that they, even though they don't turn the ball over a ton, I think Texas could still exploit them there a little bit, especially if we trap some. I don't think they've played anyone that can move like we can. So I would agree. This game, actually, if they play UCLA, I'd be fascinated to see how the rebounding battle goes, because I think we probably could be pretty dominant, but they're kind of up and down with that. If they come to play really well, or if they kind of, it's one of those games where if there's some lucky bounces, I'd be, it should be pretty closely contested if we do play them. So I'm interested to see how that shakes out from a, can we exploit them as far as like their ball handlers? Can we get them out of their comfort zone a little bit? But yeah, they're solid, but nothing special.
I mean, I'd be interested to see how either Jericho Sims or Jackson Hayes does against Moses Brown, who this year has just been completely dominating the glass. 14 rebounds per game. The dude's pretty much, if he gets into the paint, he's getting a shot off and scoring. He's their top scorer. And then there's behind him, or, the guy who's feeding him is Chris Wilkes. I was going to say Wilkins. Chris Wilkes, who is also just below 20 points per game. He's shooting-wise 47%. Not crazy. That's our other guy, Chris Smith, who's shooting 54% with, 37% shooting on the three-point line. But Chris Wilkes is just the guy who can drive and get to the basket super quickly or dish it off to Moses Brown.
Yeah, UCLA currently is shooting 55.6% from the free throw line. So
right,
that's not great.
Sounds like nice Texas.
Look, Texas is solidly in the 60s, mid-60s, but 60s. So,
but then
yeah.
You look at their free field goal, which is at 53.8%,
yeah.
Whereas Texas is in the 40.
Yeah, I mean, the UCLA's offense is an efficient offense. It's a solid offense. The free throw percentage drags things down, but other than that, they do pretty well. They don't shoot a lot of free throws, and when they do, they don't make a lot of them. But because they've got guys like Moses Brown who, he's 7'1", and he's shooting 5 feet from the rim, so, they don't get a lot of shots blocked. They also don't force many turnovers, so this could be a game where Texas wins just because they take care of the ball well and UCLA they may try to take it away, but they don't effectively do it. So, look, they're not bad. Like, I don't want to minimize them too much because, they're still ranked in the top 40 in Pomeroy's rating, so they're no slouches. They're just not where people had hoped they would be before the injuries happen.
Then let's take our eyes off of UCLA and take a look at Michigan State. What is Michigan State? Why are you saying that they have the least chance of beating Michigan State? I thought they were better than or less than UNC, but that's not what you feel?
Yeah. Well, I mean, so in an empty gym, watching whichever team plays, I'm going to say UNC is the better team. But at the same time, I know what it's like to watch a team face Tom Izzo. he's like, they lost to Kansas by 5, and they fought back to get that to 5. It was a pretty wide gap at one point. And I mean, Kansas is a legit number one team in the country. Like, I don't understand how they could beat a top 10 Michigan State and drop to number 2 just because everybody loves fucking Duke. But, I mean, I guess I do understand it. I just don't like it. But, you know, it's a Tom Izzo team, so you know they're going to be very effective defensively. They're going to be very efficient offensively. Izzo is going to draw up a couple of baseline out of bounds plays that produce immediate points. He's going to make a couple tweaks throughout the game that are going to stymie the other team. So, like, it's just... I mean, I don't know how many more Tom Izzo teams I need to see to know sort of what I'm going to get most years. There's not really many aberrations there.
So then let the fans know, what is it that a Tom Izzo team is?
I mean, they shoot the ball pretty well, but they make very good choices in when they shoot. They take care of the ball. They play very solid defense that is not... it's not a high-risk defense. They're not trying to force a bunch of turnovers. It's sort of... I mean, he's sort of a better version of Rick Barnes, basically. They're going to hit the glass. They're going to get rebounds. They're going to play a half-court style that generates an open look under a fairly structured offense. They're just really solid everywhere. Tom Izzo teams generally aren't bad at anything. And if they are bad at something, it's because they choose not to prioritize it rather than that they're really trying to do something and just not doing it well. It's like, okay, here's this really well-made car. Every year, they're the Camry. I don't know what you want to call it, but like every year, it's a very solid machine that is probably going to do well in March. And that's Izzo.
Yeah, they're the Chevy Cavalier of college basketball, I would say.
So. Chevy Cavalier.
Okay. They do everything well, and they don't hurt themselves. He has built his career on fielding teams that just don't hurt themselves.
Yeah.
And when he's had really good teams, he's also kind of had that transcendent star. I don't know if I would say they have that this year, but certainly they've got a bunch of guys that play really well. They would run through a brick wall for him. They always, they're shooting well from the outside. They always rebound well. They similarly, we talked a couple weeks ago about how Texas is turning the ball over more, whereas with Rick, he very rarely went for steals. Like, he was very comfortable just being the best rebounding team in the country, and that's who Michigan State is as well. Like, they take the stuff that happens on the glass very personally. So I think it would be, for a team that rebounds and takes care of the ball as well as Michigan State does, Texas would have to just absolutely play brilliantly, because I just don't see us out-executing them on both ends of the floor like you sort of have to. You know, Kansas just shot crazy lights out when they beat them, and I don't know that we have that kind of game in us. Because if you're going to beat Michigan State, it's not going to be a fluke. Like, you're not going to catch them on some kind of off night where they're garbage. You're going to have to, like, truly be better than them and have more talent. And I don't think we have that right now. We're not playing that clean of a level. So.
As poor Tennessee Tech found out as they lost 101-33. Yeah. But you have to figure out who you're guarding. I mean, you have one really great defender in Kurren Roach, right? You have a lot of great defenders, but he is your shutdown guy. And you have two guards in Cassius Winston and Joshua Langford who are just shooting lights out from three. I mean, Cassius Winston is shooting 42.9%. Joshua Langford is shooting 40%. They're just nails from outside the arc almost, and field goal percentage as well is pretty darn good. You have to figure out who you're going to try to have a poor night by putting on a great defender. I mean, they're going to pick apart a zone.
And they both are very comfortable shooting off the bounce, which is tough. When you have a team that, that moves as well offensively as they do, that just won't hurt themselves, but you also bring in some guards that are comfortable creating their own shot off the dribble, that's tough from three. Because you can play a terrific defensive possession against Michigan State and still get beat by a three late in the clock because those guys can, are comfortable off the bounce. That's tough. That's why they're going to be a top five team most of the year, I would imagine.
So coming into this, what are we expecting for Texas? What is a realistic expectation coming out of Las Vegas? Where should Texas be? What are you looking for during this tournament against some of the best teams in the country? This will basically tell us where Texas is in their program.
Yeah, it definitely will give us better data points than the Citadel or, you know, Louisiana Monroe in terms of where Texas stacks up nationally, what their aspirations, the realistic aspirations are in the Big 12. You know, I don't see a plausible path to Texas finishing this 2-0. Maybe if they knock off UNC and UCLA surprises Michigan State, then maybe it happens. But, you know, 1-1 or 0-2 wouldn't surprise me, depending on who they play. Texas can play with any of these teams. I don't know that they will play with all of these teams, though, in a what will be at best a neutral court, if not a semi-away game, given that North Carolina and Michigan State fans travel way better than Texas fans do. And UCLA fans may just because it's close. So they're going to have to play some of their best basketball, best possible basketball, in front of a probably hostile crowd, and they're going to have to do it on back-to-back nights. And I don't know that they're going to be able to do that. So, you know, if I have to pin down, I'll say 1-1 because I would guess that they lose to UNC and beat UCLA, but 0-2 might be just as likely. So that's where I'm at.
Yeah, that's the answer.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Texas, if we're going to take a look at just the out-of-conference schedule here, if they go 0-2, then they are, you know, they have a good chance of beating 6 out of the 7 teams remaining on their out-of-conference schedule. That one team, which is, I guess, a toss-up, is Purdue, who is pretty good this year. I feel like that's a good, you know, going 11-3 or 12-2 in your out-of-conference, that would set up pretty well for the rest of the Big 12 schedule, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it just depends on who those wins are, though, right?
Even if they don't do well in this tournament, it's not the end of the season.
No, it's not. I think, you know, the problem I have with this non-conference scheduling this year is that it is outside of, you know, you've got 3, maybe 4 games that are considered, you know, sort of litmus tests that are like legitimately solid to good teams. So you have this very limited amount of chances to prove yourself outside of the conference games. And you know, the Big 12 is good enough that if they win 10 games or more in the Big 12, they're in the tournament regardless. It doesn't matter. But if Texas is 8-10 or 9-9, then you start getting into these contexts of, well, who did they beat? And if you go look at their non-conference schedule and it's like, well, they lost to North Carolina, they lost to Michigan State, they lost to Purdue, then it's like, I start feeling like we might be in that, you know, Oklahoma State territory of last year where it's like, well, we did pretty well again, you know, we beat Kansas twice, but went 8-10 in conference. And then what did we do in non-conference? Nothing. So, you know, you get left out in those sort of scenarios. So it's important in that these are limited opportunities for Texas to build their resume for March, for them to state their claim as a legitimate top 25 team. But yeah, if they get run out of the gym both games, it's a bad sign. But if it's, you know, they lose each game by 4 to 7 points or something, and they battle really hard, if they have, Lord knows, 2 more overtime games, because this program fucking loves overtime games, then maybe, you know, then it's a different thing. I don't see a 2-0 out of this. It would be great if they did, especially if they somehow managed to pop both UNC and Michigan State. At that point, we're having a very happy next pretend we're football, but I don't see that happening.
Fingers crossed.
Sure.
So, if they win, if we're 2-0, well, if we're 6-0 when, you know, by next Friday at 7 o'clock or whatever it would be, then this is probably a top 15 team in the country that they would be ranked in that next one. I don't think they'd be much higher than that, but they'd be around that. But what I think, if they beat UNC, this is still a team that's at least going to get votes and probably would be top 25, even if they got beat by Michigan State sort of badly. So it's like we said, there's a loss to any of these four or any of these three teams there in Las Vegas would not be, oh my gosh, let's run for the hills. But certainly they stand to gain a lot if they win any of these games. And if they, however we do in Las Vegas, will have a direct impact to what we can see ourselves doing towards the end of the year, as far as, okay, a win here in Las Vegas could be the difference between being an 8 seed and being a 6 seed, or even better. And yeah, that's the kind of thing where in the long run, like, okay, well, if you put it in those numbers or those terms, that makes a pretty big difference. So it'd be nice to see them play well, and any win would be wonderful. No matter who it's against or what the circumstances, we'd take any win.
Yep.
Good stuff. Well, y'all, thank y'all for pretending we were football for the past hour. Again, I've been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. Johnny Brashear, where can we find you?
I am at Barky Carnival. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Bitter White Guy. I'm on Discord now. Will has gotten me to sign up for that. I don't know what I'm doing with it, but I'm apparently there now. So, nice. Yeah, you can hit me up on there and I'm going to be like, who is this? What is this app? Why are you talking to me?
Johnny, where do you think we can find Tim?
Where can we find Tim?
Where in the world is Tim?
You know, not many people know this about Tim because he's sort of a private guy and he doesn't really like to brag, but he is in his spare time a semi-pro drone racing participant. He's trying to make it into drone racing league on ESPN. Right now, he's in sort of this, you know, lower level drone racing league that only shows up on Twitch.
The semi-pro?
It's semi-pro in that technically he does get money, or an equivalent. Sometimes it's a barter thing. Most of what he does is
sponsored
is actually,
by.
Yeah, no, it's not even sponsors,
that
really.
Brand monster.
it's like, you know, whatever Rockstar variant they've come up with.
The sex pills that you find in the gas station.
Yeah, yeah. really what it is he's doing whatever he can to afford propellers because those are expensive. but yeah, so wherever propellers are sold or bought or bartered, that's where you can find Tim there.
And Tim, where can we find you on the internet?
InsideTexas.com and on Twitter at InsideTexasHoop, no S, and then wherever crappy LA10 papers are being graded.
Mm. And you guys can find all of us in our other shows on the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel on Podbean, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, Overcast, where you guys can find a podcast, you will find the Hornscast. On that note, thank you all for listening, and we'll see y'all next week. Hook 'em.
Hook 'em.
And have a wonderful Thanksgiving, y'all.
Yeah, eat some turkey.
Green bean casserole.
My mom makes a nice sweet potato and marshmallow thing that we get every year. It's pretty good.
Yucky.
Nah, it's great.